Kia ora and welcome back to System Fix, a podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with reforms proposed for the New Zealand health system. These arose from the report of the Health and Disability System Review Panel, aka the Simpson Report. However, they have been significantly revved up by Health Minister Andrew Little to become what I like to call the Big Little Revolution. On System Fix, I speak with regular panellists and invited guests about the changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date, and what we might expect. Thanks for joining me. Welcome to episode 21 of System Fix, the podcast for health reform junkies. Today, regular panellist Gabrielle Baker is joined by Simon Royal, former chief executive of the National Hauora Coalition and longtime advocate for Hauora Māori, as we take a look at what's known so far about iwi Māori partnership boards, the linchpins with regard to treaty partnership in the reformed health system. But first, let's take a look at recent progress on the reform rollout. When I recorded today's episode, 3 months had passed since the new health system was put in place on the 1st of July, courtesy of the Paiora Healthy Futures legislation. As I add the final editing touches today, that has stretched to nearly 4 months, the interval punctuated by seasonal afflictions, but also a holiday break, so not all bad. In the meantime, since our last episode, there has been a slew of appointments to regional roles at both Te Whatu Ora, Health New Zealand, and Te Aka Whai Ora, Māori Health Authority. To date, almost all appointments have been interim, though some it would seem are likely to be confirmed as permanent. I would suggest Rāre McKee Jansen, former medical director for the National Hauora Coalition, will have his feet firmly planted as interim chief medical officer for Te Aka Whai Ora. Former Northland DHB Chief Executive Nick Chamberlain is at the helm of the new National Public Health Service based inside Te Whatu Ora and rounding up the 12 former regional public health units. At New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa, we looked at how much freedom public health staff might have to talk and submit on public health issues. The answer seems to be maybe not so much. Another permanent position sees a national commissioner recruited from Australia. Abby Anderson has experience in both the primary and secondary care sectors and in development of community-led commissioning frameworks for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Miss Anderson steps into the shoes of Kiriana Brooking, who was interim in the role. Margarita Putasi has been appointed to the permanent role of National Director Pacific Health. Whaikaha Ministry of Disabled People has a permanent chief executive, with Paula Tesoririo appointed by the Public Service Commission. Alan Moffat, ProCare Clinical Director, has ended a temporary secondment to the Ministry of Health as Deputy Chief Medical Officer, only to take on the 6-month part-time role as Interim Clinical Director Commissioning at Te Whatu Ora. And Rosalie Percival has been confirmed as Chief Financial Officer for Te Whatu Ora. At the same time they are reforming, the new health agencies have also been carrying on with the daily operation of the health system. Recommendations by the Planned Care Task Force saw a deadline of 31st of August put in place to book surgery for existing waiting list patients, around 5,500 people. And the 30th of September was given as a deadline for booking appointments for 7,000 people waiting for a first specialist assessment. While by late September, just over half of the first group of patients had been treated, booked or discharged, and we were waiting to hear about the second group. Initiatives were also launched in the workforce space to attract nurses back to the workforce, with soap opera Shortland Street part of the mix, and to ease the way for international medical graduates looking to gain registration. The boards of the two agencies have been meeting regularly. There has been some controversy around the fact they are not required to meet publicly, a fact we've known since the legislation was enacted. Media are able to ask questions of the Te Whatu Ora board chair and chief executive following the meetings, and the board have agreed to make minutes and some board papers more readily available. Transparency is a work in progress. The New Zealand Health Plan was expected in September, but has been delayed. The health charter? Well, we haven't heard too much about that recently. We are expecting 3 new localities to be announced anytime soon, which brings me back to the topic of this episode, iwi Māori partnership boards. Kia ora and welcome to regular panellist Gabrielle Baker And to guest Simon Royal. Kia ora, Simon. Up until recently, you were Chief Executive of National Hora Coalition. Can you update our listeners on what you're working on now?
Kia ora, Barbara, Gabriel, Namihi. What am I working on now? I am just completing a landscaping project and building a swimming pool at my house.
Sounds awesome.
I'm also helping put a group of three young kids, my partner's kids, through primary school and secondary school. I'm doing a little bit of work in the health sector, in the data and digital space around Māori sovereignty. And I'm working with an old colleague of mine on a community hub concept for socially disadvantaged groups in Palmerston North in the Manawatū. Yeah, it's keeping me busy. My life's pretty full at the moment.
Oh, awesome. Namihi. Gabrielle, thanks for making time today. I know you've been busy with the next phase of the Y2575 inquiry, looking at the impact for Māori with disabilities. So how is that going?
It's been really interesting. The difficulty for Māori providers in delivering disability support services where they're underfunded. So it's been a very interesting week.
Kia ora. So this episode, I'm hoping you guys can help me better understand the role of iwi Māori partnership boards in the reformed health system. Certainly, we've acknowledged on many occasions in this podcast that these new boards seem to have been tasked with some huge challenges. And it's interesting that entities deemed crucial to the success of these reforms sit in the community and very much outside the typical bureaucratic structures that we've seen in the past. At least that's how it appears to the outside observer. I was wondering if maybe we could start by talking about how Māori representation has worked or not worked in the system up until now.
Yeah, look, I've given some thought to this over the years as CUNHC, and actually in previous roles beforehand, I was reasonably well engaged with the Māori advisory boards or the iwi partnership boards or the various names that they held, depending on where you went in the country. In Waitemata and ultimately Auckland, they had what they called the Magic Committee. It had a particular charter and form and function. It wasn't a statutory board. It had no powers to compel either CFAT boards or the HAC committee or the full board of a district. However, having said that, that board in particular had the chief executive, and at times when they amalgamated with the Auckland DHB, they had the chair, Lester Levy at the time, attend those meetings, as well as representatives from Tihi Ora, the Māori purchasing organisation representing the interests of Ngāti Whātua and others. Okay, so in theory, the idea of this board to advance the kaupapa values and the preferences and the interests and needs of Māori was theoretically in place. However, I still feel that there was a significant failure of these boards to really compel the board and senior management to make different types of decisions. They were heavily influenced, in my view, by the presence of senior executive management that was working for the Crown. They had, and I'm talking in more general terms, not just about the Magic Committee. I presented to the Waikato DHB Iwi Relationship Board, to Counties Manukau, to the Bay of Plenty, to Taranaki, Whanganui, Northland Iwi Partnership Boards. And if I can just make the statement, the extent to which they were holding their own in terms of their own mana motuhake and their independent views about what ought to happen, it seemed to me that they was inversely proportional to their influence with the DHB. The DHB was always in control. They knew that, and they would tell me that when we broke for a cup of tea or we broke for dinner or lunch. And so I felt that the problem with those boards were there was too little prescription in terms of how they were established, what mana they held, what powers they held. And so it is good to see that the government is moving to provide a little bit more prescription and have inked them in as an integral part of the locality's planning strategy. However, this is all going to come down to execution. There's a couple of things. One, you know, the execution and the ability to put these things in place. Te Whatu Ora will be running a TLA model over the top of its regional decision-making, and then you'll have Te Ako Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, will be bound to observe tribal rohe. And we've seen this in other sectors with Resource Management Act and local authority attempting to incorporate Māori leadership and mana motuhake into decision-making, and they've always been fraught. One, they're never properly invested in, And I fear that that will be the case this time round with the iwi partnership boards. They need to be very well invested in. The second thing is and this is probably the most important thing, is there is an asymmetry of knowledge and information held by, this was the case of the old boards. They simply didn't understand how the primary care industry functioned and operated. They didn't understand the inner workings of the hospital system and how resources were allocated or not allocated in that system. They had little influence in terms of understanding how or what was being done to address institutional racism in the institutions that the Crown controlled. So, you know, we're asking a lot. We're asking the representatives of these boards, the iwi boards, to come from having been disempowered in the old system to suddenly now having to hold a very responsible part of the system. And if it fails, my fear is that this could be used as a way of putting the blame back on Māori for failing to adequately, you know, inform or participate. But as I said, this is difficult because our people are not trained. They should have been trained by now.
Yeah.
20 years ago, we should have been trained Māori senior executives in the health system, Māori leaders at a corporate governance level who understood how this health system worked. And unfortunately, we don't have that.
You've actually outlined a lot of the key challenges there straight up. Gabrielle, what did you want to add there?
I kind of wanted to just go back a little bit. What Simon was saying is completely right, that the iwi Māori partnership boards as they were never properly invested in. And in thinking about today, I went back and looked, because, you know, I've declared that I'm a nerd. I went back and looked at the cabinet papers from 2000, which set out what was intended from the New Zealand Public Health and Disability Act. And the intention was that DHBs would formalise operational partnerships through mechanisms like MOUs, charters, relationship agreements with iwi in their rohe, and that these were expected to have benefits in the way that DHBs did planning and purchasing and you carried out its business. But when, and Simon will recall this very clearly, back when we were in the Waitangi Tribunal in 2018, not every DHB, 18 years later, not every DHB had one of these things in place. So it was the intention, but it was one of those intentions that was never followed through fully. The legislation allowed any number of arrangements. It didn't specify. It just said that there would be some kind of relationship with Māori. DHBs never saw this as enough of a priority to truly invest in, and the Ministry of Health didn't go to the effort fully of monitoring and making sure these things were happening. So that's, I think, the background for me of these iwi Māori partnership boards, is that they've had 22 years of not being taken seriously, 22 years of not being invested in. And if one of the reasons we know that they've not been invested in is that, as Simon says, if we had been investing in this for 22 years, we would have a whole range of people with skills to be able to discharge those roles now.
Mm.
Can I just add to that, Barbara? Look, my overall sense of the boards as they were constructed under, just listening to Gabriel walking us through the history, they felt like they were boards that were a risk to be managed rather than a resource to be supported and partner with. It didn't never look like partnership to me. They were scared, I think, of the latent power and influence that iwi possessed. And this is not just in the health sector either. This is in other sectors. And because they failed to educate themselves, the leadership of the DHBs, about Māori needs, expectations, and interests. And I think partly that was because that culturally they felt ill-equipped, that they didn't possess the cultural skills and felt, as I think a lot of New Zealanders do feel uncomfortable moving in Māori circles, is that there's a sense that we don't want to get things wrong. So there's partly that, which the price of that is paid for actually by iwi Māori, not by the people doing the avoiding. And the second thing is, I mean, there are people who just don't believe that Māori should have an independent voice and a voice in the system that separate from everybody else. So I do know in the District Health Board that I worked in that that was very much the case, even right up to senior executive management level, that they weren't on board with the idea that a Māori voice ought to be strong. And actually, you know, surreptitiously or undermined attempts for not only Māori to have a voice, but for decisions to be made that accounted for the inequity in health outcomes. So, yeah, so that's quite unfortunate.
The point you make there about the past system, people not really on board, and these people,
a good chunk of them are now being shifted over to the new system. And I just want to read from that cabinet paper from April 2021. So this was after the final report of Simpson came out. This was the paper that Andrew Little presented before the legislation was drawn up. In my view, iwi Māori partnership boards should jointly agree priorities and strategic plans for local services. Together with Health NZ and the Māori Health Authority, the partnership boards should also advise and shape regional strategies through the conduit of the Māori Health Authority. First, you raised the issue of the lack of training, particularly in this area, but also if we have people who are now working in the new system who didn't understand the importance or the mechanisms, the structures, or how to get the Māori voice, the treaty voice into strategies in the last 20 years. And now we're at a phase of these new reforms where I feel that by virtue of the fact that the iwi Māori partnership boards have kind of been tied to the localities, and the localities are coming in after the fact, how are these iwi Māori partnership boards going to be involved in shaping regional strategies, which presumably are going to be shaped or drawn up pretty soon?
It's problematic. It's deeply problematic. As I said earlier, we're asking people to come from actually a very low trust environment to suddenly now being deeply influential in writing regional strategies, where they were often kept out of the planning processes of that, or at least the inside workings of them anyway. I mean, there was a lot of surface work done. Can I just say that I think that the minister is sincere in his desire to address the principles articulated actually first by the Labour government in terms of how the Crown sees its responsibility to the Māori treaty partner. And I believe there is a genuine attempt here to try and make this work. But we're held back by a legacy, and even our own people may not even believe in it. And what I'm concerned about is that do Māori who have been, and you're right, there's going to be a lot of people on the previous boards. I move on to the new boards, I would imagine. I'm not certain exactly, but their legacy and experience has been that we don't trust the system to actually listen very closely to what our real needs and expectations are. And so what they've generally done is dumbed down iwi articulation or iwi Māori articulation of what we ought to expect. Now, there's people who don't do that. There's always been loud, vocal Māori leaders who have articulated really well about the level of control Māori are seeking in terms of self-determining our own future in a whole water system. But other than that, in a very general sense, our people have been trained to expect little. And that becomes a cultural thing that we need to get over. And those Māori representatives on those iwi partnership boards, they're not to fault around us. In the previous boards, they're not at fault. They were coached by the system to believe that you could expect little. And that is a thing that we've got to get over and get past. Now you're in this game with the real ability to make resource allocation decisions, probably only fettered by probably the boards of Te Ako Whai Ora and Te Whatu Ora, and or potentially, you know, the minister, which can be problematic as well, because our learned experiences is that when Māori priorities are contested up against the priorities of government, it is always the priorities of government that win. And this was articulated, Gabriel remember this, this was a strong point that we made in the tribunal, which is why the National Whole Water Coalition, Y2687, pushed hard for the independent whole water agency for that very reason. You know, government is about competing interests and contestability, and that priority setting is crucial. Equity has to be seen as a priority. The treaty voice for Māori has to be seen as a priority, but, you know, we will wait and see.
So just in terms of the politics of the situation, I think there a lot of people wouldn't really understand the distinction between Te Ako Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, and iwi Māori partnership boards. And the reality being that the latter, the iwi Māori partnership boards, are in fact the treaty partner. And because they have very little profile at this stage, the minister is genuine in what he's attempting to do. But I can see that having some political problems for the Labour government. Gabrielle?
Well, Te Ako Whai Ora, to as far, every time I've seen them talk about it, they make it clear they're not the treaty partner. But just because everyone's clear about that doesn't mean there's not going to be fallout later when people misunderstand what's happening, as you said. This isn't exactly what you were talking about, I don't think, but I think it's important to have a look at what the exact role of the Iwi Māori Partnership Boards are in the legislation, which is slightly different from what was in that cabinet paper. Because as far as I can tell, the substantive work around what an Iwi Māori Partnership Board would be, the public service look at that happened while the bill was before Select Committee. So things changed quite a bit after it was reintroduced into the House. The Māori Partnership Boards are supposed to provide Māori perspectives on Māori health needs and aspirations, so health sector performance, and the design delivery of services in localities. That's a very clear and specific thing, and they've built in, because I think you're right, in reality, there are a whole lot of things that make organisations work in the way that they do, and the people who staff them is one of them. And if that's not changing, what else are you going to do to change the organisation? The legislation has built in some kind of stopgap, I guess, some controls here, that where there are disputes on the locality plans between Te Aka Whai Ora, Te Whatu Ora, and the Iwi Partnership Boards, there's a disputes clause, so the minister can get involved if the Iwi Māori Partnership Board disagrees with what's in the annual planning at a locality level, which is, like, we've not had that before. And I think that's when people will realise that they have been geared up to have some power once that actually gets exercised. And it will become very political at that point.
Mm. So both of you work in the consulting sector as well. Are you seeing a growth in activity around iwi groups upskilling, as you say, Simon? Like, there hasn't been a lot of training. Are people getting on board with the reality of the role they're going to be taking on?
I've just been busy doing some other things, but I do think it's an important part of making the system work, because if they don't upskill and we don't build the requisite knowledge base, and it's not just at a governance level, it's also the ability to understand how the bureaucracies of the healthcare system work, and also understand which parts of it are contracted suppliers, such as the primary healthcare system with general practice, and what level of influence and how to influence things like national service agreements and capitation formula setting and all of these. And they require a lot of institutional knowledge and a lot of industry knowledge to be able to influence that space. There's a lot that goes on in the healthcare system. Both of you know that really, really well. And I think one of the risks that, just listening to Gabrielle, you know, on one hand, they're trying to deal with a constitutional issue, which is above really your issues in relation to legislative design. It's trying to reflect a constitutional arrangement. Now, Te Aka Whai Ora, in my view, doesn't do that, because it is a creature of the Crown. It is subject to all the same requirements as a Crown agent as Te Whatu Ora. And the minister is the ultimate decision maker. So it doesn't reconcile the constitutional issues that Māori had articulated in the tribunal, certainly in stage one. And I imagine every other stage as well. So this will keep coming up. But it does happen at a regional level and down at a tribal rohe level. And the risk, I think, you know, what Gabriel was saying is, you know, where there's conflict between iwi aspiration to control their own destiny and where they want to make decisions about the allocation of resources to support tribal tinoranga tiratanga, and how that may cut across decisions that impact on other Māori. I mean, I can just see that here in Auckland, that is going to be a very significant challenge, where you have multiple iwi who are all very vocal and they have some clever people. And because they've settled, I'm talking about Tainui, Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, and others who are close to settling, like Ngāpui and Hauraki settling, all have an influence in metropolitan Auckland. And, you know, the tribes are feeling their oats around some of their aspirations in the resource management field and their involvement in big sporting campaigns such as the America's Cup. They are stretching their legs, so to speak, in the statutory board of the Auckland Super City, and are having a significant impact on the brand that is governing over not just Auckland, Tamaki Makaurau, but Aotearoa in general. And they're not going to stop, and neither should they. You know, that this again is how is this going to be felt in a healthcare system? It may not be felt straight away, but I dare say that at some point in our journey here, if these reforms last 20 years, there's going to be times at which there is going to be, without question, in my view, a difference of view about the level to which Māori want to self-determine the commissioning and procurement of not only the most obvious general practice services in alignment with social care services too, by the way, because that is one of the other major features that we haven't talked about of the reforms is, and it's a really positive thing, is integrating social care. And that has to necessarily be done because this is essentially the mainstream version of whānau ora appearing in our sites here. And they're building it now. I mean, the system of government is building it now, and data is going to drive a lot of this.
Hmm.
But, you know, how that is all going to play out, because Māori won't want to be second fiddle players, I would imagine, in some of the social care arrangements. And they're all going to be very interested in how services are commissioned for their people in the hospital system, because the hospitals have routinely failed Māori. And, you know, this will be an area of interest that eventually, you know, iwi will want to move into this space where there's institutional racism and the failure to address. I mean, we had all those examples of, I think in Whanganui, I think, Barbara, you rang me seeking my views on the gentleman who had passed away as a result of a failure of the Whanganui District Health Board. And these things are going to become blown up, I suspect, and they'll be amplified in this, and there'll be have to be questions asked at a local level about where does the failure live and why should we be giving these organisations further funding when they continue to fail our people?
Mm.
Why would we sign off agreements to fund these hospitals that are patently failing our people?
Mm.
Anyway, I'll stop there.
I wanted to pick up on the idea that, well, you know, what are iwi Māori partnership boards thinking about now and what are they upskilling in? So there's a whole lot of things that Simon talked about, which I think requires you to understand the health system and to be savvy about, you know, what are the levers you've got available to you. But the other part is knowing your community well and knowing your community's priorities, you know, what's important to Māori living in the area that you have responsibility for. So I know about some work that was done just at the end of the DHB life cycle and in the Wairarapa, where they ran a survey of Māori to find out what was important. That was kind of overseen by the Māori Partnership Board. And the thing that came through is that the top priority was environmental health and wellbeing. One of the things we're going to have to grapple with is, like Simon said about social services, it's about what the Crown thinks about as health is different from what we think about as health. That, how are we going to reconcile that as well?
Hearing you talk about these challenges, it occurred to me, is it possible that a model may develop, and pardon my ignorance if this is kind of blasphemy in terms of iwi politics, where maybe along the way of the PHO model, where we see a number of iwi Māori partnership boards develop, but they have, say, not necessarily an umbrella, but maybe a management services organisation that provides a lot of the skill set in terms of, I don't know, negotiation, data collection.
I think you're going to have something like that. And
yeah.
In the old model, so the DHB model, there were some iwi Māori partnership boards that had a version of that. Whanganui was an example where they had an iwi Māori partnership board, but they also had this Māori advisory committee that was made up of Māori providers. And in theory, the model was that they were able to provide support and advice.
Mm.
And so I think what you might look, what you're going to have is some kind of souped up version of that.
Because Te Whata Ora is such a huge powerhouse, really. And so nationally, if you had, say, coalitions of iwi Māori partnership boards that could still have the local knowledge, but be able to tap into a more of a regional body of knowledge and power.
Yeah, our limitations are that we're pulling from a very small pool of people.
Mm.
And a lot of them who have knowledge of the system are actually going to find their way into the Crown agencies, either Te Whatu Ora or Te Ako Whai Ora. But I agree with Gabriel. You know, don't forget the Rob Cooper was responsible for the design during the HFA days of the Māori purchasing organisations. They predated the PHOs. But I think that, as Gabriel says, the problem with those is they weren't adequately resourced enough to engage with DHBs, and they were often used frustratingly by the DHBs to essentially give sign-off on annual planning documents and other things. And the DHBs could buy them off very easily through holding contracts with them. And then this was a major feature of the old system that just never worked. So, but the idea that you're suggesting, Barbara, of there potentially being a shared services organisation that's capable of provisioning advice and understanding. I'm all in favour of that. The policy advice that's needed to support the implementation of an effective primary healthcare system, for example, with inside those localities, and how it could be integrated with social care service delivery is an absolute must if these iwi partnership boards are going to have any real impact. Because I'm all in favour of smaller, smarter devices, by the way. I just think building large constructed entities such as, you know, what we're seeing, I mean, it's almost unavoidable that the government is going to have this massive beast. But I believe that if you build data-informed, evidence-informed, and with an eye to the future around using blockchain technology and machine learning and algorithm design and starts to take some of the human factor in the mainstream out of play and drive the evidence base required to actually get a proper set of policy decisions around allocation of resources to where it's needed most. Because if we were applying that technology right now and applying it fairly and evenly to address the issue of equity, I can tell you that the budgets and the money and investment that we've been looking at around Te Ako Whai Ora and the Māori Iwi Partnership Boards, it would be vastly different. Mm. It would be vastly more funding going in to fund Māori health, cope up with Māori health services. But I mean, that's just one of the battles that's got to come. And I imagine the wellbeing budget in May next year will go some way, I suspect, to addressing that. I remember the first term of the Labor government, they didn't really put anything into their first budget. Just to digress and talk about this for a second, that if you think about the first budget that they supplied, there was enormous disappointment in the Māori caucus of the Labour government. You know, they effectively won the election for them. They defeated the Māori Party and got them in a position where they could negotiate with Mr. Peters to get over the line. So, and that was done because the Māori vote shifted. And I remember being in the Beehive in the Theatreette when the announcement was made, and I don't always get on with those fellas, but I felt for them at that time, Kelvin, and because it just seemed very, very unfair. But the following year, you see, what they did, and they've done it again with this year, they've invested all the money in themselves. They've invested in the reconstruction of the healthcare system. Most of the investment that's gone in the May budget this year has gone into the costs associated with getting out of, you know, paying off the deficits of all the DHBs. They're one-off costs. They'll write them off. They're resetting. And my guess is that next year they will have to address this issue of resource allocation in a more fair and equitable basis based on the available science and evidence. And Treasury has all this information that if you want to address equity, this is going to be a real issue of where you're prepared to put your resources.
So, Gabrielle, what would you like to see happen in the next 6 to 12 months to actually move things along for the iwi Māori Partnership Boards?
The first thing is that I want to see the terms of reference for all of the iwi Māori Partnership Boards. So the process is that iwi come together, make a proposal to Te Aka Whai Ora, who then, you know, kind of agree to it, and it happens, it gets put in the schedule of the act and their terms of reference go online. And I think, as you pointed out to us in the prep for this, there's none online at the moment. We know that they're existing. There are press releases saying they exist, but I don't know what they look like. So they might be looking really good. I just don't know. So I've got a bit of an unknown, but I've got three things. One was that, I mean, Simon, it's always really useful talking to Simon because it's a good reminder of the constitutional issues aren't sorted. They're still there. The second thing is that one of the things that I've been disappointed with all of the health sector reform has been the kind of silence when it comes to tangata whaikaha Māori, which you and I have talked about before on the podcast. So I want to see iwi and Māori partnership boards include a diverse range of people and to have Māori with lived experience of disability in amongst that. I noticed that the South Island group does have that. So I was like, that's exciting, but I want to see that across the board. And the third kind of question I have is, who's going to monitor the health of the relationship between iwi Māori Partnership Boards and Te Aka Whai Ora? So they've got a monitoring role in, around Māori health, and that's in partnership with the Ministry of Health and Te Puni Kōkiri. But who's monitoring the relationship that they're part of? And I'm not entirely clear on that, but I know it will need to be monitored.
Anything you want to add there, Simon? In terms of the next 6 to 12 months, you've talked about the budget, and May budget will kind of show Labor's colours, I suppose, in terms of investment in the sector and iwi Māori partnership boards and in Māori development. Is there anything else you would like to see develop in the next 12 months?
Specifically in relation to the iwi partnership boards, look, I think I think we have to run with what we've got, the way it's panning out. I was involved in the early fisheries settlement process with the Māori Fisheries Commission in the early 1990s. And if Māori are given sufficient resource and space and time, we find our own way to organise how we want to operate. And we use tikanga to drive the processes around that. And this is as important, if not more important than anything else, that iwi Māori are given the opportunity to drive, design and drive these processes themselves. If it becomes another bureaucratic process and placed upon them by the Crown and Crown agencies, well, I know what will happen. Māori essentially will go back inside their shells and you won't get the best. So they have to strike this balance between the Crown discharging its obligations under Article 1 of the treaty to provide good governance, to be good governors of the New Zealand healthcare system, because that's their right and that's actually their duty. And that's only fettered by the obligation to ensure that iwi Māori are given the appropriate opportunity to influence and design the way in which their people are going to be affected by these policies and implement strategies on the ground. So, and that's going to be done according to their tikanga and according to their kawa, their local protocols and way in which they want to operate and engage. So there's a lot of money to be invested. I keep going back into that, but it needs to be used judiciously. And, you know, the government is eventually getting to the real challenge here for our society, and that is they haven't confronted the big issue. We're doing it in a very piecemeal way. We're doing it through the Resource Management Act. We're doing it through statutory boards and appointments to councils and local authority legislation, because we don't have a macro framework to operate from as a country, in understanding that the Treaty of Waitangi is the best thing this country has to build out a really amazing future that's interesting and everyone feels they're a part of. Because at the moment, that's not the case. So look, just cycling back, I and the iwi partnership boards play a role in contributing to the macro framework development, because we will have another example, hopefully, of where things work really well in partnership. And there will be some boards that can really step up to the mark and demonstrate that, okay, Mr. Little, this was a really, really creative and smart move, because this is now we've got a new standard for what constitutes partnership between the Crown and Māori. So anyway, I look forward to that.
You mentioned earlier on about the reforms being a 20-year work in progress. They actually have in the timeframe 2024 for the final announcements on localities. But I'm assuming if this amount of good effort is put into developing the iwi Māori partnership boards, it's obviously not a process that's going to be rushed. And 2024 is not very far away, yet they are an intrinsic part of the localities, which are an intrinsic part of getting the primary care reforms in place. So a lot of domino effect involved. There's a bit of a catch-22 there. If we're going to get iwi Māori partnership boards that are well-resourced and able to work effectively, it's not something that can be rushed, but we want the primary care sector to benefit from these changes as well. Yet again, secondary care has gone first. So that seems to be a significant conundrum for the reforms at the moment.
Yeah, unfortunately, this seems to be the way we do things in New Zealand. You know, everyone's going to be exhausted getting to the start line. You know, in New Zealand, we just don't plan this stuff very well. You know, we do make some interesting big leaps that I think is the thing that keeps New Zealand going in spite of itself. We make big jumps, big social leaps, and big social. We're known for it, and then we just kind of like throw this up in the wind and pray for the best. And it feels like this again. You know, primary healthcare strategy really didn't take true form till many years after the first years of implementation. The bits we do need to get right, I think, for me personally, is this representative partnership model that is emanating out of the health reforms.
Gabrielle, have you got any final thoughts?
One of the things I said at the beginning of all these reforms was I was kind of amazed that of all the things to survive the restructure, it was iwi Māori partnership boards. You know, they were the thing that had been so neglected by the government for two decades. So now they're here. I guess I want to have hope about them being really impactful and really, you know, successful and Māori having the health service we deserve. So I'm hopeful. I'm just always going to be my cynical self looking at things and worried
We'll go out on that note. We'll remain with optimistic. And as you both mentioned, I mean, I know a lot of people are working pretty hard at the moment, and it would be nice to think that that effort in mahi is going to produce something really awesome, as Simon mentions, our country is actually capable of doing, and putting the treaty at the heart of it would be totally unique. So kia ora and thank you.
Ka kite anō.
Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you would like to learn more about the health reforms and other issues in primary care, you can subscribe to New Zealand Doctor, Rāte Aotearoa, on nzdoctor.co.nz. We also now offer group subscriptions with password-free access. For a quote for your team, just email juliet@thehealthmedia.co.nz. If you would like to keep track of new appointments to the health sector, New Zealand Doctor Rāte Aotearoa collates recent appointments in its roll call collection, and this is available free online. To keep up with issues in the pharmacy sector, go to pharmacytoday.co.nz. Thank you to Steve Hart for post-production work on System Fix. This is Barbara signing off. Until next time, thanks for listening. Nga mihi nui.